scratched his ass, and ambled off to the restroom. Everyone else took a coffee. "Did you have trouble finding the coin?" I asked Diesel. "No, it was in Devereaux's pocket. I helicoptered to the island, but the pilot decided it was too dangerous to land at the top of the bowl, so he set me down by the tiki hut. I hiked to the bowl, found the tunnel entrance, and rappelled down the shaft. The ropes were still there from Rutherford's excursion. I found the coin and heard a chopper in the distance. Obviously, its pilot had more guts than mine because it landed on the rim and dropped a bunch of Ammon zombies into the bowl. I didn't feel like taking on the zombie army, so I hid in an alcove and waited for them to leave. They went back for the coin, I said. The coin and the rest of the treasure, Diesel said. They packed it all out. Took them hours. They were like worker ants. They even took Devereaux. Maybe they thought he hid the coin on him. Or in him. They took their ropes, too, so I had to use the stairs. They weren't bad going up, but I'm glad I didn't have to use them going down. We need to get Gramps, Clara said. He needs his blood pressure medicine. Do you have any idea where they're holding him? Diesel asked. No, I said. They sent me a photo, but there's nothing recognizable in it. I showed Diesel the photo of Gramps waving. There were no background objects, just a white wall and two faceless thugs. I have a list of all properties owned by Ammon Enterprises, Diesel said. There are 4 in Salem, 7 in Boston, 1 in southern New Hampshire, and Ammon's personal house in Marblehead. I got the list because I thought Ammon would be at least temporarily storing the treasure in one of his buildings and the stone might be with it. Clara put a bag of muffins on the bar, and we all took one. The best candidate for treasure storage is Ammon's property on Green Street, Diesel said. He owns a 4-story office building that used to be a bank, complete with a vault. The building is currently empty, slated for renovation. I know where that is, Clara said. One of the tunnels runs under it, and then the tunnel continues on to the harbor. It meets up with another tunnel that goes to the lighthouse. How long would it take us to get from here to the bank building using the tunnel system? Diesel asked Clara. Maybe 45 minutes? The tunnels don't go in a straight line. Diesel pulled a map of Salem out of his backpack. I've marked Ammon's properties in orange, he said to Clara. Are any of these other addresses accessible by tunnel? Clara looked at the map. I'm not familiar with the whole tunnel system. I only know the area around the bakery, the waterfront, and the area around Gramps' house. A tunnel would run under the house on Marjorie Street, and the warehouse on First Avenue definitely has access. Diesel took the blue diamond out of his pack and handed it to me. It found the stone on the island. Maybe it can find the stone in Salem. And if we're lucky, Gramps will be with the stone. We all left the speakeasy and followed Clara through the tunnels.
We're like the 7 dwarfs going off to work in the mine, Glow said, except there are only 6 of us.
I didn't feel up to dwarf level. The dwarfs knew where they were going every day. I was blindly walking behind Diesel. If I were a dwarf, my name would be Clueless. I checked the diamond from time to time, but nothing was registering. No blue glow, not even a flicker. We walked for over a half hour, and Clara finally stopped and looked around. We were at yet another fork in the tunnel system. The left fork goes to the Wessel house, Clara said. The house has been in the Wessel family for generations. Jerome Wessel was a ship's captain when the house was built. Bitsy Wessel ran a boarding house there during Prohibition and never lacked for boarders since there was a steady flow of rum punch coming out of the root cellar in the backyard. I dated Kenny Wessel when I was in high school, and we used to make out in the tunnel. The Wessel house is a block from Ammon's bank building. I'm pretty sure the tunnel runs under the bank building, but I don't think there's access. The men who built the tunnels didn't care about robbing a bank. That part of the tunnel dead ends 2 blocks beyond the bank at the corner of Marjorie and Clinton. The right fork goes to the warehouse on First. The rum runners brought their small boats into the shallow water or to the lighthouse. From those 2 points, the hooch was transferred to the warehouse and beyond. We went left, walking under the Wessel house and under the bank building. We continued on to the end of the tunnel. We didn't see any access points beyond the Wessel house, and the diamond never glowed or flickered or felt warm. We retraced our steps and took the right fork. We walked past the warehouse entrance and went all the way to the lighthouse. Again, no sign from the diamond.
Okay, we go to Plan B, Diesel said. We're not picking up any vibes in the tunnels, so Lizzie and I will go above ground. Everyone else will go back to the speakeasy.
Check for text messages once in a while, I said to Clara. I'll keep you in the loop.
Diesel and I exited through the root cellar in the Wessels' backyard. It was locked from the outside, but that wasn't a problem for Diesel. No one was out and about when we emerged. We walked toward the bank building and watched it from half a block away. It looked abandoned. Windows and doors were boarded over. No one stood guard at the door. We continued on to the warehouse on First. It had no doubt been impressive when it was built. Today it looked quaintly historic. A single loading dock in the back, two stories, lettering on the door said Ammon Enterprises. No guys standing guard, no tingles, no glow from the rock. I don't think he's here, I said. I don't think anyone is here.
Ammon has a house in southern New Hampshire that's a fortress. It's a huge stone monstrosity set in the middle of 100 acres. I have someone checking it out. In the meantime, I think we should negotiate for Gramps.
Are you willing to give them the coin for Gramps?
Yeah, they have the stone. I don't see where the coin is going to make a difference. The stone, the coin, and all the tea in China isn't going to awaken Mammon. Rutherford, Ammon, and their followers are already delusional and greedy. A couple more degrees of greed won't make a big difference. Ultimately, I need to get the stone and the coin back anyway.
I have Rutherford's number programmed into my phone.
Make a deal.
I called Rutherford and told him I had the coin. I want to swap the coin for Gramps, I said.
I knew we could count on you. Mr. Ammon will be pleased. He'll insist that we prove the authenticity of the coin, of course.
The coin is divided into 8 pieces, and it has the chop marks needed to read the map. Beyond that, I don't know how to prove its authenticity to you, since I'm the only one able to sense the power of the stone.
As luck would have it, we picked up a gentleman named Hatchet. He's a little odd, but we've been assured he's your equal. We found him wandering around naked on Brimstone Island, and he's now in service to Mammon.
I think he's already in service to someone else.
Finders keepers, Rutherford said, very jovial.
Good luck with that one, I thought. I wouldn't want to tangle with Wolf.
Where do you want to make the swap? I asked Rutherford.
We would like the transaction to take place at Mr. Ammon's country residence in southern New Hampshire. You can come at your convenience, and you must come alone.
Okie dokie, I said. See you soon. I disconnected and looked over at Diesel. He's in the New Hampshire house. They want me to come alone, and they have Hatchet.
Diesel's face creased into a wide grin.
They have Hatchet?
Rutherford said they picked him up naked on Brimstone and, you know, finders keepers.
It'll be more like finders weepers when Wolf shows up. He's not good at sharing.
I texted Clara that we had a lead on Gramps, but that they should still stay underground until we returned.
We need to use your car, Diesel said to me. We can't fit Gramps in the Porsche.
I'm supposed to go alone.
I'll wait by the car. I'm not sending you off completely alone.
That sounded like an okay plan. I didn't want to go alone, and I wasn't sure my junker car could make it to New Hampshire and back. At least I'd have Diesel to push me to a service station or zap up a new car. It wasn't a far walk to the bakery. Diesel let us in, and we packed a lunch for us and a bag of food for Clara, Glow, Josh, and Carl. I texted Clara that food was waiting for her in the tunnel. We locked up behind ourselves and chugged off in my car. We made a fast stop at my house so I could take a shower and change my clothes. Men can be heroic when they're wrinkled and smell bad. Women work better with a little lip gloss and clean hair. I gave Cat fresh water and a new bowl of food. I grabbed my tote bag, and Diesel and I took off for New Hampshire. The driveway wasn't well marked from the road. There was a rusted mailbox with the house number on it and a single-lane gravel road leading into the woods. We followed the road for a half mile as it gradually wound its way uphill. When we broke out of the woods into rolling pasture land, we could see the house looming in front of us. It looked like a downscale, builder-grade version of an old Scottish castle, with dark, water-stained stone walls and minimal landscaping. Halfway to the House of Doom, there was a guardhouse, complete with a man wearing black fatigues and carrying an assault rifle. Lizzie Tucker to see Martin Ammon, I said to the guard. The guard looked in at Diesel, and then at me.
You were supposed to come alone.
I'm almost alone, I said. He's going to wait in the car. The guard made a phone call and waved us through.
A second guy with an assault rifle met us when we approached the house. He directed us to a parking place and silently watched while I left the car and Diesel settled in to wait for my return. The interior of the house was even gloomier than the outside. It was all gray stone, heavy columns, dark red overstuffed furniture, and dark wood trims. The front door opened into a massive foyer with an ornate staircase. I had the diamond in a leather pouch in my sweatshirt pocket. I put my hand to it and felt it hum. The stone was here somewhere. Rutherford came to greet me.
"Again, so sorry about that misunderstanding in the cave," he said. "We certainly didn't want to leave Mr. Ammon's favorite cupcake baker behind."
Large smile. I looked around the room. "Where is Mr. Ammon?"
"He's out and about somewhere on the grounds. This is the time of day when he likes to get a little exercise. It's important to Mr. Ammon that he stay fit."
"I bet Mammon likes that, too."
"Ah, yes, we all want a fit Mammon. Speaking of which, did you bring the coin?"
"Yes. Do you have Gramps?" He nodded.
"Yes, and he's been a delight."
"I'd like to see him."
"Of course."
There were several men in suits standing at parade rest around the room. Rutherford motioned to one of them, and a moment later, Gramps was let in.
"This hotel is a disgrace," Gramps said to Rutherford. "I don't have a bathtub in my room, and my eggs were cold this morning."
"Oh, dear," Rutherford said. "Apologies. I'll speak to the household staff about it."
He turned back to me.
"Do you have the coin?"
I handed the coin over, and Hatchet stepped out of the shadows. He was wearing khakis, a white dress shirt, and a red tie with the Ammon logo. I gave him a little wave. "Heard from Wolf lately?"
"Not lately," Hatchet said. "My new lord doth forbid other contact. I now live to serve Mammon."
Hatchet made a whirly sign alongside his head to indicate crazy. I smiled, and Hatchet nervously shifted from foot to foot. We both knew there would be hell to pay when Wolf found him, and we both knew Rutherford was no match for Wolf. Hatchet came forward and touched the coin.
"It doth vibrate," Hatchet said. "It is truly enchanted."
Rutherford told his man to release Gramps into my custody, and Hatchet stepped back into the shadows.
"So glad you were successful in finding the coin," Rutherford said to me. "Of course, we'll be seeing you again very soon, I expect. Mr. Ammon has mentioned that he would like to invite you to participate in the final ceremony. It will be quite the occasion. Very festive."
Lucky me. I led Gramps out of the house to my car, where Diesel was waiting behind the wheel. I buckled Gramps into the back seat and jumped in beside Diesel, and he took off.
"That didn't take long," Diesel said.
"Rutherford got what he wanted. I got what I wanted. End of story."
"Not exactly," Diesel said. "I don't have what I want."
"The stone?"
"Yes.
We're going to hand Gramps over to Clara, and then we're going back for the stone." The diamond was humming, so I'm pretty sure the stone is there. But that place is a fortress guarded by a bunch of armed men in suits. It's not going to be easy to get in and get the stone out. Plus, I'm guessing the stone is with Ammon. I didn't see him, but Rutherford said he was on the grounds.
"Maybe he's walking the dog," Gramps said. "What kind of hotel lets a dog howl all night long? I couldn't get a wink of sleep."
I looked over at Diesel and caught him smiling. "It's not funny," I said. "The poor man still thinks he's a dog."
"It could be worse," Diesel said. "He could think he's Mammon."
I texted Clara that we had Gramps. I told her we were going to bring him back to his house, but we wanted everyone to remain underground for a while longer. Chapter 21.
"Look at this," Gramps said. "Everyone's here in my rumpus room. Is it my birthday?"
"I don't know how much longer I can stay down here," Glow said. "Broom is getting twitchy."
"Where's my cake?" Gramps asked. "And the ice cream. I want vanilla."
Josh gave him a muffin and sang happy birthday to him.
"That's lame," Gramps said, "but I appreciate the effort."
"We need to go back to get the stone," I said. "Hopefully this will all be over soon."
"Rumpus room living is getting old," Clara said, "and I don't see Gramps sleeping on the floor tonight." "If we don't resolve this by the end of the day, we'll find a better place to stash you," Diesel said.
Minutes later, we were in Diesel's Porsche on our way back to New Hampshire. Exactly how are you going to pull this off? I asked Diesel.
No clue.
I was thinking I should have taken some of Gramps' medicine. My blood pressure was probably in the red zone. I know Diesel's a big, strong, sort of smart guy with special abilities, but I didn't know what abilities we were going to need. For instance, I know it would be hard to kill Diesel, but not impossible. I know he can open locks and give me an orgasm. I know with some assistance he can pop in and out of places like Captain Kirk on Star Trek. Beyond that, it's uncharted territory. I can't help but notice we're all alone without military assistance, I said to Diesel. The men in suits had assault rifles.
Yeah, but I have my charming personality. Oh, boy.
The sun was low in the sky when we got to Ammon's driveway. Diesel drove out of the dark woods and into the sunlit field and stopped. The guardhouse was empty, and in the distance, where the monstrous mansion once stood, was a huge pile of smoking rubble.
Looks like Wolf's been here, Diesel said.
Seriously?
Once when he was a kid, he got so mad he self-combusted and we had to throw water on him.
We moved closer and approached a small group of dazed women and men in gray and white uniforms.
What happened? Diesel asked.
It exploded, one of the men said. This vampire-looking guy showed up and asked for Hatchet. We said he wasn't here, that he helicoptered out with Rutherford and Ammon. I guess that was a wrong answer because the vampire guy got real still, and I swear there was some smoke curling out of his head, and the whole house started to shake, and he told us we had 3 minutes to get everyone out of the house.
Did he have fangs? I asked.
No, the guy said, but he was real white and had long black hair, and he was dressed all in black.
Did everyone get out of the house in time? Diesel asked.
Yes, I think so. The security people left when Rutherford and Ammon left. What you see here is a household staff, but I guess we're all out of a job since there's no house.
Do you know where Ammon is now?
No, they just took off. They didn't say.
We made a U-turn, and Diesel sped down the driveway. We were on paved road when the first of the police cars and fire trucks passed us, heading for Ammon's property.
Wolf isn't making my job any easier, Diesel said. It's bad enough we're underground. I don't want to drive Ammon underground.
Maybe it wasn't Wolf. I mean, it's hard to believe he could pitch a fit and blow up a house. I'm going with gas leak. I thought I smelled gas when I was in the house.
Were you standing by Hatchet?
There was mutiny in the rumpus room when we returned, so we sent everyone home. It seemed like Rutherford and Ammon had what they wanted anyway, and the danger level was insignificant. Broom whacked Josh one last time, but it was half-hearted, and Glow thought Broom might not be all that mad anymore. If it was me, I wouldn't be so forgiving. But then Glow dated guys with snakes tattooed on their foreheads, and I wouldn't do that either. Cat was waiting at the door when Diesel and I stepped into the house. I picked him up and held him close and carried him into the kitchen. I'm glad you weren't in any danger, I said. I was worried about you. Cat probably thought this was stupid. He was self-sufficient. It was unclear how many lives he'd already had, but clearly this wasn't his first. Still, I wanted him to know I cared. Cat and I had become family.
Eep, Carl said.
I looked down at him. Yep, I said. You too.
How about me? Diesel asked.
What about you?
Am I included in this happy family?
Sure, what the heck? He grabbed me and kissed me.
What's for dinner?
Something from the freezer.
Is there dessert?
I can arrange it. My phone rang, and I saw that it was Glow.
Help, she said. Oh, crap, low battery.
And the phone went dead. Glow's in trouble, I said to Diesel.
Where is she?
Dunno.
This doesn't look good for the dessert, does it? Diesel said.
We should go over to her apartment and see if she's okay. Diesel took a box of cereal out of the cupboard and handed it to Carl.
Knock yourself out, Diesel said. Bananas Foster when we get back.
Carl grabbed the box and gave Diesel the finger. I snagged a sweatshirt out of the coat closet and hung my tote bag on my shoulder. It had started to rain and the temperature was dropping.
Search and rescue of senior citizens isn't in my job description, Diesel said.
You only do what's in your job description? He opened the door to the Porsche for me.
Apparently not.
Diesel drove through Marblehead and crossed into Salem. He was a block from Glow's apartment when she darted into the road in front of the car. Diesel hit the brakes, and I was thrown against my shoulder harness.
You gotta love the ceramic brakes, Diesel said. I have a distant relative in New Jersey who drives a black Porsche Turbo, and I'm beginning to see why. I'm liking this car.
Glow yanked my door open.
Let me in! They're after me!
I jumped out, and Glow climbed into the mini seat in the back, taking Broom and her bag with her. I got back in, and Diesel cruised down the block past Glow's apartment. She lives in a large house that had been built for a single family in the 50s and converted into four apartments in the 70s. There was some paint peeling off the window frames, and the yard was minimally maintained, but it was in a relatively safe part of town, and it was in Glow's budget. A black Cadillac Escalade was parked in front of the house. Headlights were on, and windshield wipers were working. Windows were tinted. No way to know who was inside. Diesel made a U-turn and pulled to the curb a block away so we could watch the Escalade.
It was Rutherford, Glow said. I saw him through my peephole, and I wouldn't let him in, so he broke down my door. Honestly, that is so rude.
What did he want? I asked.
He said he feared somehow Mr. Ammon had been put under an evil spell and he wanted me to lift it. I tried to explain that it wasn't so simple, but he wasn't listening. He kept saying how Mammon was angry and time was short, that Mammon had awakened but wasn't able to achieve his full potential in his present form.
His present form being that he thinks he's a poodle? Diesel asked.
More like a rabid honey badger, Glow said. Rutherford had a big bite mark on his hand. When he saw me looking at the bite mark, he said that Mammon had a hunger that needed feeding. And then he mumbled something about human sacrifice.
Human sacrifice isn't good, I said. That never ends well.
How did you get away? Diesel asked.
Rutherford was explaining his predicament to me, and all of a sudden Martin Ammon burst into my apartment. He was totally nutso, wild-eyed and drooly. His shirt was all wrinkled and not tucked in and full of food stains, and his hair was a mess. There were two security men who came in with him, but they looked like they were afraid to get too close. Ammon was making growly sounds, and between the growly sounds, he was saying, Mammon wants, Mammon wants. It was really creepy. And then what happened? I just made myself a ham and cheese sandwich. It was sitting on my kitchen counter, and Ammon ate it. He sniffed the air, spied the sandwich, and dove for it. In 2 seconds, there was nothing left of the sandwich. No crumbs, nothing. He looked over at Rutherford and growled and snapped at him, and then he turned and ran out of my apartment.
And?
Everyone ran after him. I could hear them trying to catch him in the hall, and I didn't waste any time getting out. I grabbed Broom and my tote bag and went out the window. I called Lizzie, but my phone went dead.
The front door to Glow's apartment building crashed open, and Ammon ran out, chased by three men in suits. Rutherford ran behind them, doing his best to keep up. They ran down the street, cut into a yard, and disappeared in the misting rain.
I've seen some weird stuff since I've had this job, Diesel said, but this is right up there at the top of the list.
On the bright side, we know Ammon is in Salem, I said, and I think we can be pretty sure he has the stone on him. Diesel pulled into traffic and headed for Marblehead.
It's even better. We have something Rutherford desperately wants. We have Glow.
Chapter 22. By the time we got home, the wind and rain had picked up and streetlights were on. Everyone huddled in my kitchen while I made grilled cheese sandwiches and opened a bottle of wine.
This would be fun if only I wasn't terrified that I was going to be attacked by a grinning lunatic and a deranged dog, Glow said.
I gave Carl the first sandwich. He smiled a hideous monkey smile at me, took his food into the living room, and turned the television on. We need a plan, I said, buttering the frying pan and sliding another sandwich into it. Diesel sipped his wine.
I have a plan.
I looked over at him.
We have Glow, and Rutherford needs her to remove the spell, Diesel said, so we lure him out with Glow.
And what do we do when they come after Glow? I asked. Do we drop a big net over them and wrestle the stone away from Ammon?
The net could be a problem, Diesel said. I don't know where to get a big net. I was thinking taser.
I've seen videos of people getting tased, I said. It's awful.
I like it, Glow said, taking the second grilled cheese. I wouldn't mind seeing Rutherford tased, but I think you should use a tranquilizer dart on Ammon. We don't want animal rights people coming after us.
I need to create a situation where the stone capture is controlled, Diesel said. I don't want Ammon's henchmen in the mix, and I need to make sure that Rutherford and Ammon are neutralized.
And you have a plan for all this? I asked him.
I want to have the spell undone at the lighthouse. The condition will be that only Glow, Lizzie, Rutherford, and Ammon will be present. Rutherford can watch the lighthouse beforehand and have his men stand down at a distance. I can access the lighthouse through the tunnel system, and I'll take Rutherford and Ammon down while they're distracted by Glow performing her spell removal.
I gave Diesel his sandwich. That's a pretty good plan. Tell me about the neutralizing.
That hasn't totally come together for me yet.
It doesn't involve death, does it?
Not by my hand.
Carl came into the kitchen, handed me his empty plate, and looked up at me.
He was promised bananas, Foster, Diesel said.
I looked over at my fruit bowl. Your monkey ate all my bananas.
You ate all the bananas, Diesel said to Carl.
Carl gave him the finger. Someone needs to go to the store, I said to Diesel. He glanced at the window.
It's raining.
How bad do you want bananas, Foster?
Can you make cookies?
Not unless you go to the store. I'm out of everything. I'll give you a list.
I'd go, Glow said, but I'm afraid I'll get snatched.
Yeah, and I'd go, but I'm not motivated, I said. Diesel drained his wine glass.
I'm motivated. Give me the list.
10 minutes later, we watched him jog to the sexy black car and disappear inside.
Freaking awesome, Glow said.
The car?
That too.
We returned to the kitchen. I topped off Glow's wine and washed the frying pan. I gave the pan to Glow to dry, and the back door crashed open and 2 men in suits rushed in. Glow and I jumped and yelped. Carl hid in a corner and put his hands over his eyes. Cat sat hunched and slitty-eyed, his tail twitching.
What the heck? I said. Are you kidding me?
One of the men looked over at Glow.
Excuse me, ma'am. Are you Glow?
Glow nodded.
Uh-huh.
We'd like you to come with us.
I don't think so, Glow said.
He lunged at her, and Glow smacked him in the face with the frying pan. Blood spurted out of his nose, and he crumpled to the floor. I snatched the big butcher knife out of the rack and moved beside Glow. Cat rose to a crouch. The remaining man went rigid.
Geez, he said. Look what you did to Steve. He could be dead.
Glow towed the guy on the floor.
I don't think he's dead. I just flattened his nose a little.
Rutherford appeared in the doorway.
Knock, knock.
She killed Steve, the man said to Rutherford. I did not kill Steve, Glow said. I'm almost sure of it.
Rutherford looked down at Steve.
Steve's a great kidder. I'm sure he's fine. We'll just trundle him out of here so he's not underfoot.
He turned to the man who was still standing just in front of the door.
Perhaps you could help Steve to the car.
He's bleeding, the man said.
Thank you, that's a good observation. You might want to put him in the trunk so we don't ruin Mr. Ammon's upholstery.
Rutherford stepped aside, and Steve got dragged out of the house.
Where's Martin Ammon? I asked.
He's sleeping, Rutherford said. He's had an exhausting day.
He ate my sandwich, Glow said, and you ruined my door. You owe me a new door.
Absolutely, we'll get you a new door. My apologies. It's just that the men get carried away, and before you know it, no door.
It turns out it's not that easy to undo a spell, Glow said to Rutherford, especially when you don't know all the details of the original. Not that I'm sure he has a spell cast on him. I'm just saying.
I'm sure you can figure it out, Rutherford said.
I'll help her, I said to Rutherford. I know something about these things, but we'll need a little time to do some research and shopping. Most spells require specialty aids like hummingbird wings and troll snot.
Yes, and not just any old troll snot either, Glow said. Romanian troll snot is best. I tried to use French troll snot once, and it didn't work at all.
Understood, Rutherford said. We wouldn't want to use inferior troll snot. Mr. Ammon always insists on the best.
4 o'clock tomorrow at the lighthouse, I said.
Ah, the lighthouse. I was hoping for a more private location, perhaps at Mr. Ammon's house in Marblehead.
Nope, Glow said. It has to be the lighthouse.
Rutherford looked like he was making a maximum effort to keep it together.
Right, the lighthouse. Perfect.
He gingerly stepped around the broken door, and moments later I heard his car drive away.
Great, I said. Now I have two broken doors.
Rain was blowing in, so I propped a kitchen stool against the door to hold it closed. Carl left his corner, scuttled across the room, and hopped up onto the stool. Glow mopped the blood off the floor.
Maybe you should thumb through Ripples and see if you can find a general all-purpose undoing spell, I said to Glow. Just in case things don't go as planned, it might be good if we could get the dog thing out of Martin Ammon's head.
Glow took the magic eight ball and Ripples' book of spells out of her tote bag and placed them on the counter. She had the eight ball in a plastic baggie because it was oozing liquid. Outlook not so good floated to the surface.
The eight ball's seen better days, I said.
Glow bit into her lower lip.
It's so sad. I tried sealing it with nail polish, but it's still leaking.
Diesel rapped on the back door, and I moved Carl in the stool to let him in.
What happened here? He asked, setting the grocery bags on the counter.
Rutherford happened, I told him. He came with two of his men. They were after Glow, but one of the men walked into a frying pan Glow happened to be holding.
Nice, Diesel said. And they went away?
Temporarily. We set up a meeting at the lighthouse for tomorrow at 4 o'clock. In the meantime, I thought it would be good for Glow to find a way to get rid of the dog spell, just in case.
Can't hurt, Diesel said.
I put the groceries away and started the bananas foster.
Here's one, Glow said, reading from Ripples. Good to reverse all spells unless those spells are deemed irreversible.
How do you know if a spell is irreversible?
I think they're the ones with the skull and crossbones next to them, Glow said. I try to avoid them.
I splashed some rum into the saucepan with the bananas and lit it all on fire. Cat arched his back and hissed, and Carl clapped his hands.
I don't have all the ingredients for this spell, Glow said. I need spider legs and dried primate gonad.
We all glanced over at Carl.
What size gonad are we looking for? Diesel asked. Gorilla gonad or monkey gonad?
It's nonspecific. It just calls for a teaspoon of powdered primate gonad.
Eep, Carl said.
I imagine it takes days to dry out a gonad, Glow said.
Yeah, and I don't think you'd get a teaspoon out of what Carl's showing us, Diesel said.
Carl gave him the finger and mooned him. Easy to do since Carl didn't wear pants. I portioned out the bananas foster, and Glow scooped vanilla ice cream. Diesel and Carl took Glow home, and Kat and I cleaned the kitchen. Glow had mopped up the blood, but I went over the floor again with disinfectant. This was more for my own mental health than for cleanliness.
This was fun, I said to Kat. Not necessarily the part about smashing Steve's nose, but the rest of it. I like cooking for my friends. It's especially fun when it's last minute like this.
We moved to the living room, and I was surfing for a television show when Diesel and Carl walked in and shook the rain off.
I thought you were going home, I said to Diesel.
He sat next to me and slouched back.
You thought wrong. I took Glow home and did a temporary fix on her door. I don't think she's in danger until 4 o'clock tomorrow.
Me either.
Honey, you're holding your back door closed with a bar stool. Any knuckle dragger can walk in.
Carl cut his eyes to Diesel and gave him the finger.
Nothing personal, Diesel said. It's an expression.
Can you fix my door?
I can fix it tomorrow. Tonight I'm going to keep you safe by staying close.
Oh boy.
It's going to be way better than oh boy.
Wowie kazowie?
Yeah, more like wowie kazowie.
Carl took the television remote from me and changed the channel to National Geographic.
What will we do if Ammon doesn't have the stone on him? I asked Diesel.
We'll go to Plan B.
Would you like to share Plan B with me?
No.
There isn't a Plan B, is there?
Not at the moment.
Have you talked to Wolf lately?
No.
Do you know where he lives?
No.
Do you know how to get in touch with him?
You ask a lot of questions.
The answers aren't reassuring.
You need to lower your expectations.
Chapter 23. The bakery was back in business Wednesday morning. Clara and I had been working since 5. Glow and Broom were behind the counter at 9, and customers came and went in a steady trickle as usual. On the outside, it all looked normal. On the inside, we were struggling to stay calm.
I spent the night combing through Ripples, Glow said. I was hoping to find an undoing spell that was less complicated.
I don't know if I'm going to be able to get all the ingredients for the spell I have. What if I can't change Emmon back?
Rutherford will get Martin the best kennel money can buy, I said.
It's 2 o'clock, Clara said to Glow. I'll take over the counter. You and Lizzie should go to the Exotica shop to get your ingredients, and then you can go directly to the lighthouse. I'm closing the bakery at 3 o'clock so I can lead Diesel through the tunnels.
I drove the short distance to Ye Olde Exotica shop and parked on the street. Nina Wortley is the store's owner-manager. She's in her early 60s, has long, frizzed, snow-white hair, and her face looks like it's been dusted with cake flour. Today, Nina was wearing Birkenstock clogs and a yellow bell gown from her Disney collection. Every nook and cranny of Exotica was crammed with the strange and wonderful. Wolfsbane, bat's wings, gummy bears, snail entrails, warthog hoof, powdered bridge troll penis, Snickers bars, Pringles, vulture claw, pickled brown cow tongue, rotted beetle brain, kosher salt. There was a special section for vegan witches who needed tofu substitutes for animal parts, and there was also a rack with Harry Potter wizard wands for the tourists.
I have a list, Glow told Nina.
You must be working on a special spell if you have a list, Nina said.
Glow gave her the list.
It's an undoing spell.
Undoing spells are tricky. Let's see what you need.
Nina snagged a basket and began to fill it.
Gonads, lizard beak, dingleberries.
She moved to a different part of the shop and searched a cluttered shelf.
Extract of dragon tail, my last bottle, I must remember to reorder.
She unscrewed the lid on a big jar filled with eyeballs.
One blue eyeball.
Where do the blue eyeballs come from? I asked Nina.
China, of course. They do all the eyeball manufacturing.
Do they clone them? I asked. Nina put the eyeball in a plastic baggie and dropped it into the basket.
Heavens no, eyeballs are just for effect. They're plastic.
It's from a goldfish, Glow said. They float.
Nina carried the basket to the register.
I had everything but the toad tongue. I substituted chopped newt. It should work just fine.
I just have to put all this together now, Glow said.
I can do that for you, Nina said. I can mix it together in the back room.
That would be great, Glow said, handing Nina Ripple's book of spells. I'm not good at the mixing part.
Nina returned in 5 minutes and handed Glow a screw cap jar.
The recipient only needs to drink about a teaspoon of this. The rest should be poured in a circle around him. When he steps out of the circle, the spell should be complete.
Glow settled her account, and we left the store.
It's hard to believe some of these things are real, I said. Where does she get extract of dragon tail? I asked her that one time, and she said Slovakia.
It had stopped raining, but the sky was overcast and the air was unseasonably cool. I was wearing a sweatshirt over my jeans and t-shirt. Glow was wearing a bright pink fluffy rabbit fur jacket, her usual motorcycle boots, black tights, and a short black tunic. We jumped in my car, buckled ourselves in, and headed for the lighthouse.
You're driving super slow, Glow said. The car behind us isn't happy.
How do you know he's not happy?
He's honking his horn.
I blew out a sigh.
I didn't notice. I'm distracted. I don't want to get to the lighthouse. I'd like to get onto the highway and not stop until I reach California. I'm game for California. I'm not crazy about this gig either. What if my undo spell doesn't work and Martin Ammon tears me to shreds?
That would be a bummer.
No kidding.
I'd been driving at a snail's pace, but I still managed to reach Derby Street.
I suppose I should park, I said.
Yeah, Glow said, gathering her things together. Showtime.
We left the car and walked the length of the pier to the lighthouse. Two men in suits stood midway. I nodded to them, and they nodded back.
Freakin' creepy, Glow said.
Hardly anyone ever visited the lighthouse. It didn't look historic or interesting, and there were no signs to indicate that it was open to the public, so the public never showed up. I pushed the door open and flipped the light on. Nobody home. We were 10 minutes early. A text message from Diesel came in on my phone. Conduct the ceremony on the second floor by the beacon. I'm in place. The lighthouse floor was cement, as were the walls. Hidden behind the spiral staircase was a door. I opened the door and saw circuit breakers and electrical feeds crammed into a small closet. The floor was wood planking. Trapdoor, I thought. We climbed the spiral stairs. Glow set Broom aside by the door leading to the balcony and then got busy setting up her workstation. She turned Ripples to the appropriate page and placed the jar next to the book of spells.
It seems bare, Glow said. I should have brought a candle or some flowers.
It's fine, I said. It's not like it's a dinner party. I left Glow in the beacon room, and I went downstairs to wait for Rutherford and Ammon. They arrived precisely on time, both dressed in black with red ties. I suppose this was a standard Mammon wardrobe. Ammon's eyes were glazed, and he looked totally tranquilized. Is he okay? I asked Rutherford. He's a little zoned out.
Mr. Ammon? Zoned out? No, he's just relaxing, Rutherford said.
Glow needs to do this upstairs where there's less interference from the earthly stuff that, interferes.
Rutherford looked at the spiral staircase, gauging if he could get Ammon to climb it. It would be more convenient to perform the ceremony down here, Rutherford said.
Glow can't guarantee it will work if Mr. Ammon's feet are on terra firma.
We led Ammon to the staircase and eased him up step by step. I had no clue what Rutherford had given Ammon, but I was thinking I wouldn't mind having some. My palms were sweating and my heart was skipping beats. I was terrified that Ammon would wake up and go into mad dog mode or worse. What if he actually became Mammon? Crap on a cracker. I positioned Rutherford and Ammon in front of the table with their backs to the beacon and the stairs.
Okay, I said to Glow. Do your thing.
Undo what's been done, Glow read from the book. All spells be cast aside, all demons be banished.
Excuse me, Rutherford said. That won't work. We don't want all demons banished. No. This man holds the sleeping prince of avarice. The sacred demon Mammon is poised to emerge and assume his kingdom.
Silly me, Glow said. What was I thinking? Let me start over. Undo what's been done. All spells be cast aside. All demons, with the exception of the Prince of Avarice, our good friend Mammon, be banished.
Glow looked at Rutherford and he nodded his approval.
Lickety-lickety, down it goes, round and round, step aside, spell be gone.
Ammon was panting and drooling.
Now what? Rutherford said. Is that it?
We have to get him to drink a teaspoon of the potion, and then we have to pour it in a circle around him, and then when he steps out of the circle, the spell should be broken.
Should be, Rutherford said.
Hey, Glow said, this isn't a cake recipe, this is hocus pocus.
I thought I heard the trap door open and close downstairs. No one else seemed to notice.
Glow poured out a teaspoon and offered it to Ammon. He sniffed it and growled.
Maybe he needs just a tad more trank. Glow said to Rutherford.
I left the dart gun in the car, Rutherford said. Just get on with it.
Have you got any rawhide treats with you? Any bacon bits?
Is it essential that he drink it? Rutherford asked.
Yes. This isn't cough syrup I've got here. This is spider legs and monkey gonads. It's not like you can get this at Rite Aid. It's a critical part of the ceremony.
Try again.
Glow held the spoon out to Ammon, and Ammon knocked it out of her hand. He sniffed at her jacket and growled.
Bad dog, Glow said to Ammon. Sit.
Ammon lunged at Glow and sunk his teeth into the hem of her jacket. Glow grabbed Ripples and smacked Ammon on the top of his head with the book. Ammon growled and tugged at the jacket.
It's Rabbit, I said to Glow. Take it off and give it to him before he mauls you.
Glow shrugged out of the jacket, and Ammon ran to the other side of the room with it.
Diesel appeared in the middle of the confusion and grabbed Ammon by the scruff of his neck. Ammon yelped and dropped the jacket.
Search him, Diesel said to me.
Two red spots appeared on Rutherford's cheeks.
Foul, this wasn't allowed. This is terrible. I can't allow this. Oh my goodness.
I ran my hands over Ammon. The stone isn't on him, I said.
We feared the stone would interfere with today's treatment, so we stored it someplace safe, Rutherford said.
So then you don't mind if we search you too? Diesel said.
This is outrageous. I'm appalled, truly appalled. You people have no honor. We had an agreement.
Actually, we had no agreement, I said, running my hands over Rutherford. We never discussed this.
It was understood.
He's clean, I said.
You will never get the stone, Rutherford said. Never. Mammon is guarding the stone.
I thought Mammon was trapped inside Martin Ammon, I said.
Yes, technically, I suppose that's true, Rutherford said. Still, you won't be able to steal it away from him. We've taken precautions.
Glow had another spoonful of potion ready for Ammon. Nice doggy, she said. Ammon wriggled away from Diesel, and for a moment looked like he was going to lick the spoon, but he leaned forward and licked Glow instead. He woofed, grabbed the jacket off the floor, and bolted for the balcony that surrounded the beacon room. He tripped over Broom when he went through the door, stumbled, and flipped over the wrought iron railing. Everyone gasped and froze for a beat before rushing out and looking down at Ammon. He was laying Spread Eagle on his back.
Holy bejesus, Glow said. Do you think he's okay?
Ammon's eyes fluttered open.
Aroo, he said.
The two men that had been standing guard halfway down the jetty were running toward Ammon.
Bacon, Ammon said. What? Who?
Rutherford rushed into the beacon room, snatched the jar of potion off the table, hurtled down the stairs, and ran out of the building. We looked over the railing and saw Rutherford pouring the contents of the jar into Ammon's mouth.
Whoa, Glow said. That's a lot of gonad he's giving him. He's going to get diarrhea.
People were gawking from the restaurant at the water's edge and from the ship museum. An EMT truck pulled onto the wharf with lights flashing. A cop hustled down the wharf toward Ammon.
Time to go, Diesel said.
We ran down the stairs, crammed ourselves into the electrical closet, and squeezed through the trap door. Clara was waiting for us in the tunnel.
How'd it go? She asked.
It was mixed, I said. Ammon did a flip off the lighthouse balcony.
Is he okay?
Okay is relative, I said. He's not dead, and it looked like he might be coming out of the dog thing.
I saw him move his foot, Glow said, and he sort of had a spasm when Rutherford was pouring the potion into him.
I wasn't sure how I felt about all this. Ammon wasn't a good person, but I didn't wish him dead or paralyzed or thinking he was a dog for the rest of his life. I mostly just wished he would go back to being a self-absorbed billionaire and leave me alone.
Even if Ammon is perfectly okay, this is going to occupy everyone's attention for a couple hours, Diesel said. We should use the opportunity to look for the stone. They have it someplace safe. The first safe place that comes to mind is Ammon's bank vault.
I'll take you to the Wessel House exit, Clara said. Then I'm going back to the bakery.
I'll go to the bakery too, Glow said. My bike is there, and Broom could use a cupcake.
Chapter 24. We left the tunnel system at the Wessel House and walked to the bank building. Two men in suits were lounging at the building's front door. No assault rifles in sight. They didn't look especially worried about an attack. In fact, they didn't look worried about anything, maybe because they were both sucking in weed. I guess Mammon took a lenient view on recreational drug use. We were standing downwind, and I was getting a contact high. Diesel took the blue diamond out of its pouch and dropped it into my hand.
Anything?
No.
Won't hurt to check anyway, Diesel said.
We moved to the side of the building where a paved driveway led to a rear metal fire door. Can you open it? I asked Diesel.
Yeah, and I'm guessing they're not bothering to set the alarm. The building isn't in use, and there's a construction dumpster here. The guys out front are just window dressing. If Ammon is using this safe, he probably feels it's secure enough.
He slid his hand over the door, and I heard the lock click. He pushed the door open, and I held my breath and waited. All was silent. No alarm. I stepped in and looked at the control panel beside the door. No blinking lights. The alarm had been deactivated. The back door opened into an empty storage room. No windows, dark interior. Another door stood open at the far end, and there was some dim light beyond it. We crossed the room and looked out into what used to be the bank lobby. Light was coming from a skylight and from two small windows in the front of the building. The lobby had been gutted. The floor tiles were chipped and covered with dust. There was an elaborately scrolled wrought iron gate on the back wall. We went to the gate and looked inside at a small foyer leading to a massive vault door with a lock that looked like it was straight off a movie lot.
Well, I said to Diesel.
Diesel opened the gate and walked up to the vault. He put his hand on the lock, fingers first, then the flat of his hand.
I'm guessing this is the original lock installed when the building was completed, Diesel said. That's good, because I can't do a lot with a computer chip beyond scramble it.
He moved his hand a little and listened. He did this three times, spun the dial, and the door creaked open.
Diesel grinned. Am I good or what?
It was a large walk-in vault. Plastic tubs with snap-on lids were stacked against the wall. The tubs were clear, and I could see that they were filled with gold and silver coins. Some tubs were bigger than others, and the big ones looked like they held an assortment of jewels, hammered gold goblets, and fancy perfume and spice bottles. The treasure from the gunsway. Very impressive, but not what caught my attention. Hatchet had my attention. He was sitting on a folding chair in the middle of the room. He was dressed up like an insurance salesman in a cheap suit, and he was holding a samurai-type sword. He had a mask attached to an oxygen tank on the floor beside him.
Hey, Diesel said.
Hatchet gave a curt nod. So, this is a new look for you, I said.
I feel the fool, Hatchet said. 'Tis a sorry day when I must wear such cloth as this. Hatchet is of another age, and this is foreign garb for Hatchet.
Are you supposed to be guarding the treasure? I asked him. He slumped in his seat.
I will guard nothing without tights and tunic.
He blew out a sigh.
Truth is, I have not been asked to guard the treasure. I am locked away here as part of the treasure.
You have a sword.
I found it in a bin.
We need the stone, I said to Hatchet.
It is not here. I would have captured it for my true liege lord if given the chance.
Do you know where it is?
Nay, I do not. It was on Ammon for a while, but the dog part of him grew too vicious under the stone's influence. Rutherford sometimes transports it in a thick leather pouch. I believe it is currently locked away in a safe, but I don't know where.
I looked at the plastic bins stacked against the wall. So this is what $190 million worth of treasure looks like.
Actually, it is a lot less, Hatchet said. As in many tales of adventure, the facts have changed with the telling. When evaluated and tallied, it was determined this amounted to a mere $25 million.
Hardly worth worrying about, Diesel said. No wonder Ammon left it unguarded in this vault.
It's not unguarded, Hatchet said. The silly security men come to check on it from time to time.
How long have you been locked in here? I asked him.
Since mid-afternoon. 'Tis getting tiresome.
He looked over at the vault door, which was slightly ajar.
Am I to stay? Hatchet asked.
Your choice, Diesel said. Hatchet jumped off the chair and rushed to the door. For a moment, I was afraid he would lock us inside, but he scurried away.
Sometimes he really creeps me out, Diesel said. He's like a big, pudgy rodent.
This stone search is dragging, I said. I vote we let Rutherford and Ammon have it. Not to mention, we don't even get to keep it. You gave it away to Wolf, so let him get the stupid stone from Rutherford and Ammon if he wants it so bad.
I like your thinking, and I'd like nothing better.